I'm Christina.
And this is Erin.
And you're listening to
Something to Wag About. I am so happy with my dogs right now. They are just chilling.
The older BC boy, whose name I will not say, is on his bed right beside my feet. My younger one is on the floor next to him because she thinks the bed I offered her is trash. And the other two are conked out in the living room. And it's usually really hard for my dogs to do this at this early hour. It's easier for them to do it after they've had a WALK and done some stuff. But it's really hard for the BCs to do this at this time of day. And I'm really proud of them. It only took 9.5 years.
Oh. I'm actually really impressed because my puppy is, I mean, he's staring at me with hopeful eyes, but he's calm.
He's and you are kid. Eating, to be fair. If I was eating,
that is true. All right.
So let's talk about some questions you should ask or some things that we should think about when you're choosing a dog trainer.
Yes. And this is an important one because there are so many dog trainers out there and it's a very unregulated field. Mm-hmm. Right? So anybody can call themselves a dog trainer.
Anybody can call themselves a canine behavior consultant.
Yes.
You know, anybody can use any of those terms. You don't need a special piece of paper. I have a few pieces of paper that say independent organizations have given me those credentials, but anybody can put that on their website, can stick a sign up outside. Anybody can use those words. They're not protected like a medical doctor or a dentist. You're not allowed to just go tell people you're a dentist and open business. You have to be certified, thankfully.
Yes, thankfully, indeed. But I wish I could say that with our business, too, because we can do a lot of damage if we're not educated in the methods that we're using and in, you know, if you're working with behavior cases and in behavior and how dogs learn and how methods work and all that. So we just wanted to discuss some of the things to look for when you are trying to choose a trainer, maybe some flags too that would be a sign that maybe you want to look elsewhere. Do you have one that's kind of at the forefront of your mind when you're looking at trainers?
Oh goodness, I have so many. I have so many. I guess the first thing I do is I look at the person's website or their Facebook, whatever media they're using. I look at it and I look at the dogs to see what the expressions on the dogs look like. What kind of hardware do they have on the dogs? Are they, you know, wearing harnesses? Are they wearing e-collars? Do the dogs look sad? Do the dogs look super excited? What are the dogs telling you? What do you see just looking at the dogs on their website?
Yeah, that is something I love to look for too, especially if I'm even more a fan if I can see some videos, because it's amazing what good photography can do. I definitely look at it, but marketing can certainly make somebody, you know, a trainer look like their dogs are in a better mind space than they actually are. I love seeing videos because when I see videos, I can really see the dog's expression and how they're interacting with the person. You know, are there tools on them to get that expression? But I do also recognize that not all trainers put videos up, so it's not, you know, a hard set thing. But yeah, absolutely, looking at what's on, because, you know, there are wonderful websites who have these wonderful photos of dogs, and all the dogs are in prong collars. And that is a bit of a flag to me, because, you know, what training methods are we using to get that state in our dogs definitely matters.
I look at the tail sets and the ear sets, too. Because a lot of dogs can be shut down and appear calm versus calm and happy or content. So those are things to kind of look for. And it's really hard to tell in a picture. And I love that you brought up marketing, because dog training is such a booming industry, especially since COVID. I mean, everybody has a dog. Everybody has several dogs now. Most people have more dogs than they ever intended on having. And part of this business, and it is a business, we do make an income training dogs and training people, is that some side businesses popped up teaching dog trainers how to market. So there are a lot of websites and businesses and stuff out there where any dog trainer can go and give them some money. And then they're given a website, right? And with all the marketing that's developed to suck people in and to maybe be a little vague about how they train or what their education is or what their experience is.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that because it's amazing how many of my targeted ads right now are actually on how to market your when I'm scrolling through social media. It's actually very impressive at how many of these businesses are trying to get me to improve my marketing for my dog. So it is a really important factor. Obviously, we want to go to websites and try and get some information on it, but to just be curious. And it kind of brings us to the next point about being curious about your dog trainer and actually opening a dialogue with them and asking the dog trainer about methods they use, maybe even just training their own dogs, what their values are training their dogs. I want to know that I can have an open dialogue, but then also just giving them a chance to talk a little bit so that we can kind of get into their mind so that we can see what it is that they value when it comes to dog training.
Yeah. And especially when we're calling someone because we have a problem with our dog, it's easy to just tell stories about your own dog. But when you're choosing a dog trainer, you want to really give them space to talk. So when you're trying to figure out if this person is safe for your dog, if this person's a good fit for you, really give them space, ask them open questions and give them space to talk. And a red flag for me is a trainer who won't have a phone conversation. So I did that in the past. I said, no, I'm too busy. I'm swamped. No phone calls. If you want to chat, let's do a consult. But I was getting a lot of students who just weren't a good match for me. And now my program is, if you want to work with me, I want you to be excited to work with me. I want to be excited to work with you. And so I have these phone calls and I might bypass them if I know, you know, if you're a friend of a great student, I might not make it mandatory in that case if I have a connection already. But in general, I don't allow people to just book on my website. I want that phone call first so we can make sure we're a good match. Because if your values and my values don't align, then we're not necessarily going to go anywhere. And I'm going to waste time and money and potentially put the dog backwards because we're not on the same page.
Yeah. And it is really important because even just that willingness to have a conversation, spend some of their time that, you know, we aren't earning income. Like you said, it is a business, but a trainer who's willing to take some time to have that talk to make sure you're a good fit really just shows where the values are for that trainer and that we do want to see success. It's not just about taking your money. when I'm working with people, I feel bad if I can't get success. Now I know I'm not a good fit for everybody. And it is why it's nice to have that conversation first to make sure that we are a good fit. Because if you're paying me, I don't want to waste that money. I don't want to waste your time. And like you said, I certainly don't want to do any damage to the dog as well. So yeah, it is a really important point, whether or not you can see it right on their website. Oh yeah. Hey, you know, book a call with me, or you just reach out to them and say, hey, can we have a chat? That is a really good thing to look for when you're trying to choose a trainer.
And on that note, be careful because back on that marketing and sales programming, a lot of trainers have scripts. I don't even know how many scripts I've been sent trying to show me this is how you close a sale on a phone call. I don't let people book on that phone call. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible. I want you to go home. I want you to look at my prices, look at my packages, look at what I have to offer and think about it. And then you can book. But generally, if you really want to book a time, I might pencil in a time, but I'm like, okay, and call me or email me or whatever. Contact me, text me. I don't care. After the phone call, you can text me and email me or Facebook me, whatever, Instagram me. But go home, think about it, and then let me know if you want to book. Because I don't want impulse buyers and I'm certainly not going to do any kind of high pressure sales. I hate high pressure sales. It makes me feel icky when it's done to me. And I never, ever, ever want someone to rush into purchasing or feel pressured purchasing a package with me.
Yeah. That's actually something I'll leave. Just in general in the world, if somebody's trying to high pressure me into sales, I'll walk away.
Yeah, even if I really want what they're selling, I'm like, oh, yeah, you can't talk to me that way. I don't like this.
It stresses me out. And honestly, even if I, you know, because I have had people and seen, kind of like you said, scripts to get that high pressure sale, trying to close a deal, it stresses me out. Like, I honestly just, I physically can't do it. So I do the same thing when I'm on a call with a person. I have a rates page that I send them and I tell them to think on it and get back to me after they've had a chance to either think on it themselves, or if they have a family, have a conversation with the family to make sure it's a good fit. And then they can contact me. I do know some people are pretty antsy to schedule an appointment just because they're hoping to get help as soon as possible. I'll do the same thing. I'll pencil it in, but it's not set in stone. I'm like, nope, get back to me. Let me know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really happy you brought that up because it is super important. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I'm not sure if this will come out before or after our talk on extremes, but be careful of anyone that's talking to you on the phone about your dog for a couple minutes or by email and saying, oh, your dog is so extreme, you need this right away. Like, that kind of extremism is another red flag for me. Take a deep breath and step back a little bit from that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Most things can wait a few days. I mean, if it's gone on too long, a few more, you know, obviously we don't want to wait months on some things, but most things can wait a few days. You know, if I'm on a phone call and it sounds like it's a significant safety concern, I might make some suggestions that they could implement right away if it sounds like there is a danger that's happening, but it's not in a pressure salesy way. I might just, yeah, I want to make sure this person's safe. So if I can just recommend, you know, one thing they could do to make sure if it seems like there's a flag there, I certainly will do that. But it's not like, oh no, I got to see you tomorrow. Yeah. Or else your dog's not going to be okay if I don't see them tomorrow. So you got time.
I always save a few spots a week for emergencies for my existing clients. So for instance, a dog gets attacked or something happens, I have gaps every week for those circumstances. And if they don't get filled, I catch up on emails. But I also will keep those spots for, say, someone calls me, they just brought a dog home, they have three kids and the dog's growling at the kids. That is important that we make sure those kids are safe. And that kind of scenario, I will sometimes see you right away, but it's very obvious that that is a safety concern, like you say.
Yeah.
But if your dog's been leash reactive and he's been leash reactive for 4 years, you don't need to see me today. You can do whatever it is you're doing and I can see you in next week or in a few days and it's going to be fine. So another thing we can ask our dog trainers is, I really like to look at their education. And certificates are important to me. I like to have credentials where independent bodies evaluate the trainer, but that's not everything. Even more important than that is, who have they learned from? What courses have they taken? Who are their mentors? And dog trainers that don't keep up to date on new dog training, or they only learn from one person, or they figure it all out themselves because granddaddy was a really great dog trainer. You know, those are things to me that those trainers wouldn't interest me.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know that it's a continual learning curve for everything. New science comes out. We are always learning. And even positive reinforcement trainers, like if they're still working on stuff that, you know, was 10 years ago, like their education was 10 years ago and they haven't stayed up to date, I would question that, because positive reinforcement training, just like all training, learning behavior, everything, it's continuing to evolve. And if we don't stay up to date, then we're kind of being left in the dark a little bit and not using necessarily the most ethical or efficient methods. So yeah, it is really important that it's not just the credentials they have or the experience they have had. It is the, what have they done in the last 6 months, in the last year? That is what I'm definitely looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I stopped using any kind of tools on dogs 11 years ago, pretty much exactly 11 years ago, to be honest. And I can tell you the difference in me as a trainer 11 years ago versus now, or even 5 years ago versus now, is a big difference. And so part of that is because I am training geek. I want to know all the things. I want to take all the courses. I want to learn everything from everybody. And then I take the pieces that make sense to me and incorporate them into my own program. Now, you as a dog owner don't need to take all the courses, but if you can benefit from a trainer who does take a lot of courses, that way you can have the up-to-date stuff that's relevant to you and your dog.
Exactly. I think the last thing that just to touch on a little bit, and going back to websites and how people advertise themselves, we talked about looking at photos, also looking at the language that they use. Are they talking a lot about dominance? Are they talking a lot about leadership? You know, those things are important because, like, giving you a picture as to how they view their relationship with their dog, which might be an indication of how they train their dog. When it comes to kind of those buzzwords like dominance and all this type of thing, I don't worry so much if my clients are using those terms. I have a lot of clients who will talk to me and be like, yeah, my dog's being dominant, or I need to do such and such so that my dog thinks I'm the leader. And I don't worry about that stuff, right? Like, I don't even, honestly, I just let it pass. I don't try and correct them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, walking in front of your dog, so you're the leader. Honestly, I let that slide right on by and talk more about, you know, what can we do to get the behaviors that we want. But if a trainer is using those words, and especially if they're using those words to advertise, that is definitely a flag for me.
Big red flag.
Yes, big red flag. And at the very least, I would certainly want to ask them about it. Because sometimes people might use leadership in a different way. I don't know. But it is certainly something you'd really want to have a very open dialogue about. But I can tell you, for the most part, if I see words like dominant stuff on a website, I'm like, okay, let's go elsewhere.
The biggest red flag for me would be the words calm, submissive. that's a huge red flag for us. But yeah, it's funny because from the average person, you just pick up buzzwords. They don't necessarily have the same definitions to you as they would to a person who's educated in behavior and dog training. So I don't care if my clients can say whatever story, whatever words make sense to them. And if they're a training geek, we can go delve into that. But if they just want a family pet who is a pleasure to walk, we don't need to go there. Exactly. But as a trainer, I would expect they're educated. And dominance is a thing, but it has a very specific definition. Yeah. And it doesn't apply to a relationship the way that a lot of old school trainers use it. What kind of words do I want to see on the website? I want to see maybe...
That's a hard question. Like, what do I want to see? If I'm being perfectly honest, I am not looking for specific words. I am looking for an overall picture. And I know it's not very actionable, which I know sucks. but, you know, I love words like ethical and relationship building and, you know, building bonds. Like, I don't know, like, there's just, that's your building bonds, right? It really is hard for me to say specific words, because even things like force-free can be used in the wrong context, right? Yeah. So I am really looking at an overall picture.
That's actually a really good point, because when you said force-free, that came up for me, because I don't like to identify as force-free, because to me, that is more used by the extremists on the positive reinforcement community. Be careful of labels, because they don't mean the same thing to everybody. I'm never going to hurt a dog, scare a dog, try to startle a dog, or, you know, use those methods. But I'm also uncomfortable using the term force-free because of who I see using it. Exactly. So really be careful on looking at labels and assuming your definition is the same as other people's definitions.
Yeah. Quickly circling back to things that I don't like to see, because apparently that's much easier. Things we do like to see is guaranteed results. That's one we almost forgot to mention, but it is, if you're being ethical, the dog's an individual. There is no way I can predict how long it's going to take for that dog to learn necessarily that the first thing we use is going to work. Like, training plans change, right? Like, there's no way until we start a training plan. And even once a training plan is started, I can't predict how long it's going to take for that individual to learn. just like people. Everybody learns at a different rate. And it's really important, because if somebody is guaranteeing a certain length of time, you know, boarding trains to, like, send your dog to a boarding train and they will be fixed from barking at people in 2 weeks. that's a huge red flag, because that tells me they're going to probably try and, what's the word I'm looking for?
Use compulsion.
They're going to suppress the behavior. So they're going to use compulsion to suppress the behavior. That's not fixing the problem. That's not fixing the emotions that are leading to those behaviors we're seeing that we don't want. And there can be a whole heck of a lot of fallout for that. So yeah, that's something to be mindful of when you're looking for a trainer.
So now I feel like this is a bit of a rant session, but I have one more.
Okay, do it.
I train the dog in front of me.
Oh, yes.
And I actually say that a lot. And because of the way I'm seeing it used now on social media, I'm actually like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be saying that. Because the intent is that we look at that dog in front of us, what they're doing today, how are they feeling today, what are they capable of today? And we adjust our training plan to suit what that dog needs. But what I see it being used for on a lot on social media and with other trainers is to justify the use of aversives. Train the dog. Oh, I tried cookies. It didn't work. So now he's in a knee collar, you know, and a lot of the pictures that were going around lately, like, they'd have that caption and then a dog sitting there in a prong collar and an e-collar and a harness, and they got a treat pouch. Like, oh yeah. My goodness, what is going on here? So yeah. That's a great concept. But I think that term or that saying, that phrase is being used in a way to justify, instead of educating yourself on how to better train your dog, just slap a prong collar on the dog.
Yeah. And along with that, and this is really important. I can't stress this enough. And I have certainly had clients that I will refer elsewhere because maybe it's a breed or it's a certain behavior that I just don't have a lot of experience with. But if you are working with a positive reinforcement trainer and not seeing the results that you want, that doesn't mean your dog needs a prong collar. Okay. And it is okay to maybe try a different positive reinforcement trainer. Because yes. Again, everybody's education is different. Every positive reinforcement dog trainer is going to approach things a little differently. Just because one method didn't work doesn't mean another method that is still also using ethical, you know, we're not just slapping on a prong collar and e-collar. There are other things we can try that maybe that trainer just doesn't have experience with. And I certainly, like, sometimes I'm like, nope, I'm not seeing the results I want and I don't know where to go from here. So I'm going to refer to somebody who has more experience with this particular issue or this particular breed. Not all trainers might necessarily say that, but it's okay for you as an owner to be like, this isn't working for me. Let's go try a different positive reinforcement trainer. Doesn't mean you need to go try, okay, this isn't working, I need to put a prong collar on my dog. No, that's not necessarily the case. I'd argue it's never the case. We just need to try a different method.
And on that note, I do want you to be careful that you're not going to see instant results for any behavior problem. Fair expectations are important, especially considering your dog's history, their breed, their social history, all that stuff. Yeah. And you do have to commit to a certain time of a method before you're going to see results.
Yes.
But you should be able to also have an open conversation with your trainer. Say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with the rate of progress here. How are we doing? How are you feeling? And really have a conversation with your trainer about that. And if you're uncomfortable talking to your trainer about that, maybe that trainer and you aren't a great fit. Part of my job as a trainer is to make my students feel comfortable talking. And I actually use this app called Marco Polo, where the premium users can record a video and then send it to me. But most people use the free version. So they just hit record and they talk and it comes to me. There's no editing. And I love it because I get a feel of what they're actually feeling. I get a big picture now of what really is going on for these people, because it's hard living with dogs with behavior problems. And a carefully curated email might not give me the information that you just talking into your phone about how you're feeling does.
Yeah, I love it. I use Marco Polo now too, because you recommend it and it's amazing. And I do, I love it. I love it for just being able to stay in touch, but absolutely, you certainly get a better idea of what is going on with that relationship and how that person is feeling. And it's back to being able to have an open conversation with your trainer. And like you say, if you're not comfortable doing it, then maybe it's not the right trainer. And that's okay. It's okay to look elsewhere. But just remember that doesn't necessarily mean I have to look elsewhere and completely switch to, you know, using tools that might cause discomfort in your dog just because one trainer didn't work out for you. Certainly it's okay to go and explore other positive reinforcement trainers.
All right. I think that's all I have to say. You have anything else you want to add, Erin?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Well, we'll catch you again